Welcome, one and all, to episode 17 of Project Geekology, the show where we talk about something. And this something, this week, is Mulan 1998 and Mulan 2020. We're going to be comparing the two, the live action and the original animated film from the Walt Disney Animation Studios. And we're going to try to figure out which is better. Cough, cough. It is the original. Sorry. Maybe I'm jumping the gun here. I actually don't know your opinion on this. But we're going to be getting into what works and what doesn't work about both of the films. And before we do that, I'm going to go ahead and introduce our other host. By the way, my name is Dakota, and I'm joined, as always, with...
Anthony.
Anthony, what have you been up to this past week?
I went back to watch Mulan 2020. I had seen it. Like, we talked a little bit about it in a previous episode. It's always nice to go back and watch Mulan 1998. So I've been doing that, and I've also been playing some Assassin's Creed Valhalla.
Valhalla's the new one. You're playing it on what? PS4 Pro or Xbox?
I've been playing it on Xbox One.
Okay, and how's the experience so far?
It's pretty fun. More of an action game, not so much stealth game like the earlier Assassin's Creed games. The earlier ones were a lot more stealth-based, and the last few have been very like action-packed or like really more action-oriented, stealth-optional type games and more RPG-like.
Okay.
But I've been really enjoying it. It's been pretty fun. I mean, it's cool playing Vikings.
Yeah. So Assassin's Creed is always, I mean, not always, but, you know, in the past decade and a half or so, they've been pretty decent games whenever they come out. I remember the first couple were groundbreaking titles for the consoles and stuff. I remember really loving not just the Ezio Auditore trilogy of Assassin's Creed games that they made, but the original as well. And it's a shame that they're not doing the stealth thing. So for those of you who don't know, Assassin's Creed is basically a modern day story of a guy being put into a machine to retroactively live through his genetic memories of his ancestors. And his ancestors happen to be in a lineage of a long and lengthy lineage of assassins. And basically you're recapturing that time in history by living through those memories. So what's great about Assassin's Creed is that you're going through different time periods, different eras, and different places in history, and you're experiencing different things. So are we still following Desmond, the original character from the Animus, and like the modern day version of Assassin's Creed, who goes into his ancestral history, or are we following someone else at this point?
It's somebody else. I don't know when they started on this like new character, but I know Desmond is still like in the universe. There's kind of callbacks when you step out of the Animus, but I mean, really, at this point, that part of the story is lost on me. I haven't kept up with it, and I no longer really care about. I no longer really care about it. I'm more into like the, you know, when you're actually in whatever the setting is of that current game. I know that I think one of my favorite games, and this one had stealth to it, but this one was when it really started to become like action-packed, is Assassin's Creed 4 Black Flags, the pirate one. That one right. Is like really, I don't know, like that. I thought that one was really fun because you're sailing on boats and you're getting into like naval warfare and
piracy and stuff like
yeah,
that.
Piracy, yeah, piracy, and like you're attacking other boats and like you're jumping onto other boats. So I always thought that was like pretty fun. Assassin's Creed 3 kind of had some like, a lot of people gave it flack, but I still kind of enjoyed that. That one was the one that you play the Native American, I think his name is John.
Was it like,
or Connor?
Yeah, I think it was Connor. But it was during like the early days of America, right?
Right, right. It took place during the Revolutionary War. Like kind of like, okay. Yeah, like during that, like before and then like kind of like during.
Okay, that's cool. Yeah, because I'm sure there was a lot of assassinating going on at that time as well. So it is kind of cool. Now, if you were to play Assassin's Creed Valhalla after playing one of those original titles, and this wasn't called Assassin's Creed, would you even make the distinction that this kind of feels like an Assassin's Creed game? Or has the series just changed completely?
So the gameplay mechanics are still like kind of there. Like the climbing, like the leap of faith into the bale of hay, or like into the pile of hay, and like kind of in some ways the fighting. So there would be like similarities. Like, okay, yeah, this kind of feels like kind of like an Assassin's Creed type game. So yeah, like I mean, there's some mechanics that are still there. It's just the gameplay is a lot different. It's more action packed. It's more RPG based rather than like kind of like a straight game where you're like navigating. There's no leveling up. I mean, you can assassinate pretty much anybody you want to.
Okay.
You know, in like the earlier games.
Nice. All right. So anything else that you've been up to, or, you know, besides Mulan and Assassin's Creed?
No, that's pretty much the biggest thing. How about you? What have you been up to this week?
This week I kind of busied myself with reading all of the current High Republic novels and short stories and comics that have been released so far. Ooh. I really enjoyed the novel that kind of started it all, The Light of the Jedi by Charles Soule. I think that he did a really good job of, you know, breaking in this era of the Jedi. It's supposed to be 200 years before the prequels. So, you know, 200 years before the Phantom Menace and everything, presumably. It's supposed to be like the height of the Republic, which is why they call it retroactively, I guess, the High Republic. Because this was, you know, the Republic at its prime. Everything kind of worked like clockwork. But something is happening in the galaxy that's, you know, probably going to subtly change that throughout the course of many novels and stuff. So I read Light of the Jedi. That was really good. I read the junior novel by Justina Ireland, Test of Courage. And that one was kind of, you know, just kind of cute, and it's a kid's novel, so I wasn't like expecting too much. But one of the characters in there, Imri, who's a Jedi Padawan, is like one of the coolest characters so far that they've introduced, for reasons that are kind of spoilery, so I can't really get into it. But I'm excited to see where they go with that character specifically. And the comic by Kevin Scott, the High Republic issue number one, kind of just ties in with the end of the original, or the Light of the Jedi. So I'm really enjoying it. I think it's, you know, a lot of people gave it flack and are still giving it flack, actually, because, you know, there's still the Phantom Menace side of Star Wars that wants to hate everything new, that they don't particularly care to read or watch or consume. But I don't find anything in the Light of the Jedi or the High Republic so far that's, you know, I think is objectively bad. I think it's a really cool and fresh look at the galaxy far, far away. And I'm excited to get more into it. I know Claudia Gray, who we've mentioned in the past, is coming out with a novel next month that's going to continue in that new era of the universe. So I'm really excited going forward with that. You told me earlier in the week that you had ordered the special edition cover of Light of the Jedi. Did you end up getting that or no?
It's on its way.
Oh, okay. What does it come with? I forget.
It comes with a pair of socks and a pen. Like you know, like a pen that you put onto your shirt.
Okay.
So I'm actually pretty excited about that. And it's actually signed. The book is signed.
Oh, nice. That's awesome, actually.
Yeah, so I'm actually pretty excited about it. I've read some reviews on it and, you know, some of what you've had to say about it, and I'm actually pretty excited to jump into it. I mean, you know, I know exactly what you're talking about. There is that side of every fandom that hates on anything new, and if you really look at Star Wars from like a fan point of view, every era has something about it that you can enjoy. Even the prequels, even the sequels. Mm-hmm. You know, it might have not have been ideal as a whole, but there's still things in it that you could find that you enjoy about them. And absolutely. You don't have to completely hate it or be dismissive of it, you know?
One of the things that I like try to think about when I'm watching specifically the sequels, because it's pretty clear that they're not a very well put together trilogy. Individually, the films are fine to great, you know, like depending on the day that you watch them or whatever. But you may not agree with some or even many things that happen in some of the movies and stuff. But the choices that are made have been made, and, you know, that's it. We're going to have to either enjoy the movies or, you know, find another fandom at that point. But the hate that you see online for it is totally unwarranted. There are way, 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 way worse films out there that you can rag on. But anyway, so that's my two cents on the sequel hate particularly. And before that was the prequel hate, you know? Like everyone, oh, why was Yoda flipping around in Attack of the Clones? That's so stupid. But I loved it, you know, growing up in the movie theaters, seeing Yoda like force pull his lightsaber out of his little belt buckle and, you know, just flipping around with Count Dooku. That was one of the coolest scenes for me as a kid. And as an adult, I'm still like, yeah, this is awesome. This kicks butt.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I still, like, I don't hate that. And, I mean, I understand because, you know, you're used to puppet Yoda and, you know, kind of being a little silly. But, I mean, it was a different time for him, and Yoda was kind of old by the time mm-hmm. you get to Empire Strikes Back. And, you know, he's like kind of like that silly old man. But, you know, that's got wisdom. I totally agree. Like I said, you know, there's parts that you can love in each and every single one of them. I don't know about you. I don't know if you have anything else to add, but as of recording, we are 16 minutes in. Why don't we hop into the main event of this podcast? You know, let's get down to business.
To defeat the Rorans.
To record a podcast.
Yes. Anthony, why don't you start us off in our discussion of Mulan?
All right.
I don't know if you want to start with the new film or you want to start with the classic. We can talk about them together, but whatever.
We can talk about them together. But I'll start off with Mulan 2020. So, and I'm thinking of this, especially as like a second watch through. If you're watching it without the lens of it being a Mulan movie, it's a really fun movie to watch. It's like, okay. It's really fun to watch. It's, you know, I love those Wuxia films, you know, it's very like Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, you know, running on the walls and, you know, dodging arrows and all that stuff. You know, it's got my boy Donnie Yen in it. It's got Jet Li in it. I always love seeing either or, especially Donnie Yen. Donnie Yen, I like the characters that he plays.
He always, yeah, whenever like, brings... he showed up on screen, I would be like, Donnie! I love him so much.
I know. I understand the flack that the film got. You know, it wasn't a musical like the animation. There's a lot of key things missing. But if you... There were some... The heart of the story was still there. It was just mm-hmm. very different in how it played out. And there were certain things in it that still kind of stayed the same. Depending on whatever part of the movie... I don't know if you would pay attention. Some of the music would play in the tune of the song from the animation. Yeah, so
for me, those were the best parts, actually. You know, I would be like, oh, this is this song, or that's that song. And I would hear it, because that's, you know, that's the part where I would feel like, oh, I'm watching Mulan, you know?
Yeah.
Because those songs have just been ingrained in our minds through years of watching Disney films and going to places like Disney World, where they play that in the background and stuff. So, yeah, it's I loved hearing stuff like that.
I think that I would have still have watched it, even if it wasn't like a live action Mulan, if this was like some other name, I still would have watched it, because I like films like this. There's so many of them, though, that are like kind of the same. I don't know if you've ever watched a bunch of Wuxia films, but there's always like this really bad guy, and he always has like this witch that is like backing him. There's always a witch in these movies. And, and then like the heroes, they always have to like fight those, you know, obviously the witch before they fight the last guy. And sometimes the witch kind of turns good. Sometimes I don't know. It's crazy, but yeah, I mean, I don't hate the film like a lot of people do, but I understand why people don't like it, because as like a Mulan film, it's not good, but as its like own thing, it's pretty fun to watch.
Okay. All right. I agree with everything you just said, actually. I do think it is a fun film to watch. Some of the action is top-notch.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of, like, cuts that, you know, conveniently help, like, the action move along. But for the most part, the action is really solid. Speaking of Wuxia, you're talking about that very floaty kung fu type of movie, you know, where, like, people will, like, you know, slow down or jump in the air and kind of float back down to the ground, and usually that's because they're suspended on ropes and stuff, but they've, you know, accentuated that to almost like a style of like film, and I think that worked sometimes. I don't think it worked always in Mulan 2020. Now going back to Mulan 98, I want to just say that, like, I don't think I watched it a lot when I was a kid, but I watched it at least once in theaters, and for whatever reason, the film stuck with me. I must have watched it after the fact, but I remember only once watching it in theaters with my grandfather, and the music is so good. The music is so good, and it propels the story on. The story, obviously, is about a war against Imperial China from invaders, and in a bid to find soldiers for the army, they go to different towns and small villages, and they find Mulan's village, and they request that one male from every family is brought in to join the army. And her father, who was an ex-warrior, presumably because he has a blade and, you know, armor and stuff, joins the army, but he is, you know, feble, old, and crippled. In the original, I think he's crippled as well, right?
Yes, he's he has a cane. Yeah, he had fought in the past.
Right, yes. So Mulan decides to take it upon herself to relieve their family of that burden of, you know, undoubtedly losing their father to her mother. Because most likely, and they made it pretty apparent in Mulan 2020, that if he went, it would mean his death. Because position that he can't really fight. So it's a really empowering story. And what I like about what the story is trying to tell, it's almost like breaking down barriers of, you know, norms of like societal structures and stuff. You know, she's a woman, she's supposed to bring honor to her family through marriage and, you know, being a proper woman and stuff. But she would rather bring honor to her family through saving her father's life. So it's almost like she's breaking with tradition. She's breaking with tradition so as to help save her empire.
And she's like risking her life, not really just through combat, but also, you know, with the views, is that, you know, had she been caught in any moment before her actual reveal, I mean, she would have been killed.
Yeah.
Because and of the deception. You know, yeah, and it's a woman posing to be a man, and that's like very against their views, and you know, it was lying, it was a lie, it was deceit. So had there been any other moment that she had been revealed other than, you know, when she saved them, they would have either killed or expelled her. But I mean, in the movie, it was very clear that she would have been killed.
Yes. They have, you know, through several different like song montages, like I'll Make a Man Out of You and stuff, they show her growth as a character, you know, as she become, as she goes from just like a lowly village girl with no marital prospects at all because she's so awkward, to a true warrior that will help save China from invaders. And it's, I think the music in that movie is some of the strongest that Disney's ever produced, just because it's catchy, it tells a story, and it helps push the story forward through, you know, it almost has that like Eye of the Tiger sort of montage sequences where you're seeing a long period of time condensed into 2 minutes. And I think that's where the original's strength was.
Yeah, you get caught up in the song, so the time lapse isn't really so much more noticeable than than the, you know, the newer version. The newer version, you weren't really too sure on, you know, really what like the time lapse was. Like, I mean, you knew that there was some time passing, but it was a little bit easier to tell that there was a lot more time passing in the animation than, you know, through the newer movie. But you know, it's in these points that the live action and the animation share like the same, you know, like Mulan going off to war for her father, the training. It's these points that both of the films share like kind of like that same plot. Like it's kind of following the same, even though in the newer movie, things play out a little different than the animation.
And several changes were specifically made to either make the film perceivably more culturally appropriate and also historically accurate. So the first major change comes from the change from the Huns to the Rurons.
Yes.
I don't want to assume that I know a lot of Chinese history and stuff, so I'm not going to make a huge show of any knowledge that I have, because I don't have a lot of knowledge on ancient Chinese history. But I did look up the Rurons, and there was an invasion / war that was recorded with northern China. I'll give the movie credit there, but I don't think that necessarily changes any of the plot per se, because they still kind of do the same thing. These Rurons, their end goal is pretty much the same. They kind of give the bad guy a little more motive, in the sense that they make it apparent that the king had killed the Ruron leader's father, and he was taking credit for certain things that the Ruron leader's father had done, if I remember correctly. So I kind of liked that they at least tried to make the characters seem a little more fleshed out. And the second thing that is most easily noticeable is the, you know, besides the music being gone, is the removal of Mushu in favor of a phoenix.
Right.
What do you think about that?
So when you're watching from the aspect of it being a Mulan film, it's definitely a missing character. But once you kind of just kind of throw all that out the window, it doesn't become as noticeable.
What do you mean?
Like I said before, it's a really fun movie to watch when you're not really thinking of it as a Mulan film, and more of like a action-packed wuxia film, you know, like kind of like its own thing. Like I know it's Mulan, but I kind of separated it from its like animated predecessor
version.
Yeah,
okay, yeah. I understand what you're saying.
Like I was trying to kind of make sense of that. Like when, so when I first watched it, it's like, okay, you know, like I see all these differences. It's like, oh wow, you know, this the lack of Mushu is really different.
So I'll jump in really quick because I think there are some parallels between the animated film here and the live action film that are worth discussing. In the beginning of the live action film, we see a young Mulan jump onto a phoenix statue and break its wing. In the original 98 film, in the when she's visiting the ancestors' shrine, she somehow breaks the head off of a dragon or a lion dragon or something like that.
That's Mushu.
Oh, Mushu breaks it? Oh,
yeah, Mushu breaks it.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Well, there is that parallel. But
Mushu's trying to wake up the dragon spirit, and like he's like hitting it with a gong, and like the head comes off. Oh,
the head falls off. Yeah.
Yeah. Like you're right. There is that parallel, though.
In the new movie, they do make a big motion about the father often going to pray to his ancestors to guide Mulan towards safety, I'm assuming. And that's when the phoenix kind of materializes and follows Mulan through wherever she's going. So at the beginning, when she leaves, she goes through like 5 different biomes as she's like traveling. I'm like, she doesn't even have a map. How does she know where she's going? She's clearly going like 1,000 miles just to get to this one camp. I'm like, how is this possible? I kept talking to Jen as we were watching the movie, and she kind of like stops. She kind of stops with her horse to like camp for the night, and she gives the horse like an apple tea. And I'm like, she's probably wondering whether or not she should have consulted a map before leaving, because, you know, she's nowhere near home anymore. But then the phoenix comes to help guide her the rest of the way. I wasn't sure at first whether or not the phoenix was a visible creature to everyone else or just to Mulan, because it wasn't, you know, apparent at first, and then later on in the film nobody seems to react to the fact that there's a mythological bird flying around them except for Mulan. And we're going back to this, do you think that removing the dragon from the film and putting a phoenix is better, or do you think it doesn't do anything? Because I'm looking it up now, and the phoenix as it's pictured in the movie, or the phoenix as we understand it from, you know, Greek mythology, doesn't really exist in Chinese mythology.
I was thinking about that, and I thought that that was like a weird change. I thought that was an interesting change. If anything, they could have decided to put a dragon. I don't know why they decided to put a phoenix. Even if they didn't want to go the Mushu route, it would have been more culturally appropriate, I think, for it to be a dragon, because whenever you see Chinese anything, there's usually, you know, dragons a part of their culture, and, you know, just like various different ways, there's like stories and legends that involve them. But yeah, I've never really heard of anything with a phoenix, so I thought that was an interesting route that they went. It didn't really make sense to me. I think it would have made sense if they decided to do a dragon.
Yeah, and they didn't even have to do it like the Mushu route, where it was like a tiny little fire-breathing dragon. They could have actually made, you know, like the original dragon that was supposed to guide her to safety, the big dragon that Mushu destroyed the head of. They could have done something like that, and it would have still been as epic, and it would have been a callback to the original, you know, at the same time. There was little things like that kind of took me out of it, because, you know, as much as you say, like, if you take the Mulan out of it and just try to enjoy the story, yes, it's an enjoyable story, but it's still a Mulan film, and they're picking and choosing what they want, and their choices don't always make sense to me. Like,
yeah,
when they get to the camp and, you know, you're starting to meet the other characters, in the original, the characters are so good. In the camp, they're so easily identifiable. There's the skinny, goofy one. There's the big, huggable bear. character, there's like the short and angry guy that's talking like this always. And you have, you know, you have like a group of characters that are really easily, really recognizable. And they try to give those personalities to normal looking people. And that kind of took me out of it, because it was just like, this is supposed to be like a huge like action movie, and then you have like a bunch of comic relief that doesn't really sit well with me. But I did come to enjoy some of the characters and some of the portrayals that they made.
So they kind of like replace Shang, which is Mulan's love interest in the animation. And so Donnie Yen was kind of the Shang, but it wasn't really a love interest. Her love interest was kind of, was the, was like her fellow, like, soldier, but it didn't really blossom into anything. The characters that you're talking about are, Ling, Chen Po, and what was the other one? I think Yao. They did have a Yao.
Mm-hmm.
And the newer one.
Did you notice that there was a guy named Cricket?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that, I'm pretty sure that was a callback to the little cricket.
The fact that there was a cricket, yeah. Yeah, that was weird, but whatever. I didn't mind that. What did you think about the hawk? You know, in the original movie, the hawk was the antagonist's, you know, sidekick. You know, in a lot of Disney movies, they give characters like Jafar, you know, evil little crony animals to help do their bidding, like Iago and stuff. Or Ursula had her two eels, Flotsam and Jetsam. I'm trying to think of others. But anyway, those are the two that come to mind at the offset. So in this film, in the 2020 version, they've decided to keep the hawk in some instances, but most of the time she's in her human or witch form. She's like a transforming character. She can transform into a flock of birds. She can transform into pretty much everything. What do you think about her character?
So in the original, the big bad was Shan Yu.
Yeah,
I don't like, I felt like the bird that was flying around him seems more like a falcon rather than like a hawk. But this one was very much like a hawk. And the big bad in this one is Bori Khan. And so, yeah, his sidekick was like this witch. Yeah, that would change into a hawk or a flock of birds, which was, it was interesting. It was a crazy change. Okay, so yeah, her name is Xian Yang.
In the original, it was, you're right, it was a falcon in the original. It wasn't a hawk, my mistake. The hawk's name is Hayabusa. I don't know if that was even said in the movie. But so in this movie, she's a witch that kind of takes the form of the hawk to either spy on enemies or, you know, get to places that a normal person wouldn't be able to get to. But she also has other abilities. Like, she has like every ability in the book. You know, she can go into other people's bodies and animate them.
Yeah.
But I have a question. Because this is something that, like, I noticed like halfway through the movie. I'm like, wait a minute, this doesn't make any sense. She goes into the bodies. We see that several times. Like their shadows merge or something sometimes. And or sometimes, like, you know, she just dives right in. And you assume that she uses the body to go and, you know, do whatever she needs to do to, like, schmooze over whoever she's talking to get what she wants. And I understand that part. But then she leaves the body in either a flock of birds or she turns into the woman. What happens to the original body? Does the guy just die forever? Like, is he done? Or does the body wake up somewhere else at that point? Because... like, several times, she goes into the body, she goes into another person's body, and then when she's done with it, the body just kind of disappears, and she turns into herself again. So does she just kind of, like, I assume she kills him, right? Am I thinking about this too hard?
the person wakes up somewhere else, I'm like, whoa, that was a crazy dream.
Whoa, I just told the king that, I just told the king treason, basically.
Yeah, that was a little bit on the crazy side, and her arc was a little weird too. I mean, she was like kind of like this like big bad, and like I understand that she was kind of doing this thing because Bori Khan was promising her a world where she wouldn't be judged, because she had this ability, and something that we didn't talk about, and like Mulan and some of the other characters have, is called Chi. Mm-hmm. And it's like this power that they have within, and they don't really talk too much about like what exactly it is, but what I had gathered from it is that it's this power that makes them a bit stronger, gives them abilities that give them an edge over somebody that's normal, I guess. I mean,
what I want to know is this chi, because they talk about it early in the film, and I assumed that chi could be wielded by it can be wielded by men as well, because they, like, when she uses the chi in battle, in the training montage or whatever, the training scene, everyone congratulates her, oh, I didn't realize you had that ability or whatever, you've been hiding it from us, and she even gets, like, you know, kind of like semi-promoted because of it, in the ranks. Early in the film, her father says, like, you know, he's talking about her chi, and the mother says they will think of her as a witch, or people will start to think that she's a witch. Do all women who have chi in this universe turn into what we see that hawk woman turns into? What's her name? I forget her name.
Xianyang.
Do all people with this chi ability, you know, after developing their abilities further, do they all turn into this witch type of character? Because she was clearly a witch who could use chi.
I know.
Mulan was just a girl who could use chi, but had no prospects of, you know, turning into something else, basically.
And this witch was, like, the only one in the movie that had, like, these abilities at all. Like, not even the men were, like, shape-shifting and turning into hawks and, flocks of birds or dogs or whatever. Like,
yeah.
But I do believe that the reason why they were able to, like, run up the walls and, like, do all this other stuff was because they were using chi. That the Roran army was, like, filled with chi users. And that's why they were able to do what they were doing. And okay. There were certain things that kind of got lost on me. There are some, like, pretty cool sequences in this live-action film that I really enjoyed. Before, like, this big battle breaks out in this, like, field, I like the horse chase. Where cool. they're chasing Mulan and a group of soldiers are chasing these Roran soldiers, and they start shooting arrows at them, and I really like that she, like, dodges them, and it's crazy, like, the way that they turn around on the horse, like, they, like, jump off the horse, run alongside the horse, and then, like, kind of jump back onto the horse, but, like, facing backwards. And they start, like, shooting the arrows. It was crazy. I mean, it was, like, very, like, a very, like, wuxia moment.
What I liked was the way that they kind of still used the avalanche scene from the original film, but kind of flipped it on its side, where the enemies, like, she tricked the enemies into doing it, because there were no, like, firecrackers or fire explosives that she could shoot into it like she was able to in the original movie. So I really like the fact that they kept that in, even though they changed a little bit of that. Little stuff like that doesn't bother me. You know, I actually quite liked how they adapted that part. Now, going back to chi, because I think this is the biggest problem with the movie, actually. Not how the magic works or anything. But in the original Mulan, what makes her arc so great is that not only is she a woman, you know, she's not supposed to be in battle. She's not supposed to have gone off to war. She's, you know, going against the grain. She's swimming upstream. But she's physically the weakest of all the people in the movie. Literally, she has the weakest physical strength of the entire army. But because she works on it, because she has the courage to move past it, and because she keeps pushing herself, she becomes someone that others look up to. She becomes someone that can overcome her weaknesses to become something more. But by including the fact that she has chi in this movie, they remove that empowering arc, which I think it's the most empowering thing in the whole movie, the fact that she came from nothing but worked her way up to like a superhero status, you know? Not that she was like a crazy, like powerful warrior at the end of the movie, but she was determined enough to get to where she needed to be. In this movie, she was given all of her abilities from birth. And the whole training scene didn't really work for me. Because, and that's the most powerful scene in the original movie, is the training scene. You know, her coming to finally be able to do everything that she was told to do to become a man. You know, you won't be a man unless you're able to do this or get to the top of this pillar. In this movie, she's given all that from the start. She has chi. She can walk up the entire mountain, you know, holding two buckets of water. And it doesn't do anything for me because she already has the ability. It's like saying, hey, Captain Marvel, go walk up this mountain and do this. fight these people. Obviously, she's going to win because she's a superhero. You know, that's what bothers me about this movie. It kind of takes the most empowering part of her original arc and just gets rid of it. That's what I feel is the weakest part of the movie for me, just from a comparative point of view, because the original, you have a character who comes from nothing but works her way up to the top, and the new one, you have a character who's given everything from birth, and yeah, she tries to do what she needs to do, and she does, but it's not as empowering. I know I keep using the word empowering, but that's the word that I'm looking for.
I think one of the craziest things though about this newer film is that it's not like Lion King where you have to make a whole bunch of CG characters or Jungle Book and whatnot. The movie was already set up to be like an action film, you know?
Yeah.
And true. And it was a musical also. The thing, they got the action part down pat, but what they missed was some of the heart of it, which was like the humor, the lighthearted parts. You know, the songs, of course. It was missing, you know, Mushu. Even though that they had like the tribute to the cricket. I mean, you know, the cricket even had his part. You know, there's things that it was missing. But, you know, with that being said, like I said, you know, the movie, it's not a terrible movie. It's just a terrible Disney movie. If that makes sense.
Sure, I see what you're saying. I mean, I did like the action. I did like the adventure of it all. I love the setting. I love the costumes. I loved, you know, the environments, the vistas of all of these, you know, beautiful Chinese landscapes. I think, man, that's a beautiful place. I want to go, you know?
For real, dude. And she, it's something that you had mentioned was that she had seen so many different, like, biomes. Like, seriously, like, I mean, there's snow, there's deserts, there were plains. I mean, she had a...
Mountains, forest.
Dude, she had a battle with that witch in, like, a volcanic area. Like, it was, like, an acidic volcanic area. Yeah. Like, that was crazy, dude.
There was a lot of really cool and visual things that I really liked. The last fight scene with... What's the Ruin leader's name? I keep calling
Bori Khan.
I didn't really like the last fight with Bori Khan because of the way it was filmed. A lot of the scene was shot looking upwards, and it was just kind of ugly because, you know, they're on top of these scaffolds, so most of the scenes you don't see the world around them. You just see like their body and then sky behind them. So it was, and it wasn't like a brilliant color sky. It wasn't like a sky on fire. It was just a gray sky in the background. And I think that it was kind of ugly, just visually. But the actual fighting, the idea of them balancing on that log, while it's not an original concept, like I think, you know, obviously Pirates of the Caribbean did it way better with the Johnny Depp and Orlando Bloom fight. I think that's a series we gotta talk about. But when it comes to that particular fight, it was just okay. And I think that's how I feel about the whole film. It was okay. It was a fun film. As an adaptation or adaptation of the original, I don't think it really makes the cut. It feels almost like a fan film in that respect.
Yeah.
What did I... In terms of things I didn't like about the original film, just to, you know, because I'm casting all this blame at the new film, I don't really like Mushu. I think his character was too much for the film, and it was a little racist. if you go back to watch it, it's just a lot of stereotypes. I don't want to say racist, yeah. That's the wrong word. It's stereotypes, and you know, American Chinese stereotypes. So I'm happy they didn't go that route. I also don't think Eddie Murphy was necessarily right for that role, but he's so synonymous with Mushu that I can't picture anyone else doing it, you know?
Yeah, right.
But yeah, I never liked Mushu per se. I always thought that he kind of like, he was too much of, I think the perfect balance of humor was characters like the cricket, characters like the matchmaker, characters like the soldiers in the army. Those are really funny characters that like worked in the scheme of the story. But Mushu was kind of always behind the scenes, and his humor kind of just took you out of the story a little bit to poke fun at whatever was happening at the time. And that's, even as a kid, I don't think I liked Mushu all that much, and I don't like him particularly now. But anyway, that's a little tangent. I do wish they would have used a Mushu-like dragon that flew about, you know, behind Mulan and above Mulan and guided her places instead of the phoenix. That's just my opinion.
I can see what you're talking about. Mushu's character kind of took you out of the cultural setting of the animation. I mean, it was a dragon, right? But his character was so American.
Yeah, he really was. It's like a really bizarre thing, because you have everyone in this movie, you know, at least like trying to be Chinese or trying to be some idea of what Americans think Chinese people act like. And then you have Mushu, who's just he's just Eddie Murphy. He's Eddie Murphy in a dragon, a little tiny dragon.
Doing stand-up.
He's doing stand-up, and it's a weird thing. But it's almost charming in a way at the same time. It's like, I don't know.
Hate it, but it has its moments. It has its moments, yeah, where it's too much, but it also has its moments where it can be like funny.
I'll tell you this. I really think the movie made, the new movie, had its strongest moments, and it knew it. It knew that these were its strongest moments because they would play the original themes, not the actual like lyricized songs, but they would play the themes from like the classic songs in the original movie in the background of certain powerful moments. And that's when I would get emotional. And those are pretty much the only times I feel like I was really emotionally invested, because I don't know, there's a power to music, obviously. It's clear when you're watching movies with good scores.
Like the Matchmaker song?
Yeah, even that. That was pretty good too. I was oddly like very emotional actually when they showed Ming-Na Wen, who was the original Mulan back in 98. I thought that was handled really well. It was obviously a cameo. It wasn't but it was an extended cameo where she had a line, and it was almost like a passing of the torch sort of thing. And it felt really powerful and nice that they gave Ming-Na Wen the opportunity to come back for that. I love that kind of stuff. So we're going to be closing this out soon, but I just want to say, when we originally started this podcast, we made the goal of 30-minute episodes. And consistently, without fail, we have missed that mark every single time. And it's become apparent that like we can just continue talking about like even stuff that we don't have a lot to say about. Like when we were starting this up, I'm like, what am I going to say about Mulan? Like I don't really have that much to say about Mulan, but we can continue talking. We can easily make this a 2-hour podcast, but for your sake, and for the sake of not repeating ourselves over and over again to try to get our points across, we're going to start closing this out now. So Anthony, why don't you take the reins?
Well, yeah, to close this out, do you have any Last remarks on Mulan?
I'm happy I didn't spend $30 on it.
Yeah, fair enough.
It was a good movie. Okay, let me scale that back. It was an okay movie. It was enjoyable. If it was on TV, I'd let it play for a couple minutes, and then I'd probably move on. That's how I'm at. That's how I feel anyway. I'm kind of a purist for the original. What about you?
Well, the new one, it's not a terrible movie. It's a terrible adaptation, and the original will always hold a place in my heart. But you know, I won't, like I said, I won't destroy the newer film, because it is a fun film. It's just not a good Disney film.
We should in the future do more comparisons of the Disney live action films. Like, I recently saw Aladdin. I thought that was a pretty decent adaptation. I thought that was pretty faithful to the source material. I really loved the Beauty and the Beast film. The new songs that they put in there were fantastic. Even the Cinderella one from back in 2014, 2015, that was pretty good too.
I need to see that.
But I haven't seen that. I haven't seen stuff like Jungle Book. I haven't seen stuff like Lion King yet. So there's certain ones that like we can go into and just do comparisons of the original and the new ones. I would love to do that in the future.
Okay.
What are we doing next week? I forget.
Cobra Kai.
Cobra Kai! All right, guys. We're doing Cobra Kai next week. That's exciting. We're going to be talking about, what, all three seasons?
Yeah. Yeah. Let's talk about all three seasons. It's been a couple weeks now since season three came out, and I know that everybody's binged it already, or almost everybody, because a lot of people have been talking about it. Let's talk about everything that's out.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for listening to us here at Project Geekology for our 17th episode. Next Monday, we'll be diving into our discussion of Cobra Kai for episode 18. For episode 19, we did something a little different, where we asked you to vote in our poll to determine what our next topic will be. And you voted for Star Wars Episode 1, The Phantom Menace. If you'd like to make your voice heard for episode 20, go on Twitter right now and vote in our poll for the following week. The topics included for our episode 20 poll are The Lion King, 1994 versus the 2019 remake, The Princess Bride, Godzilla 2014, and the new Star Wars book, Light of the Jedi. You'll also find our poll on the Geek Critique YouTube channel. Be sure to find all links to our show and socials in the show notes so you can keep abreast on all Project Geekology news and updates. If you enjoyed today's show, share it on social media, review it on your preferred podcast application, or talk to us directly online. Thanks, have a good one.
Goodbye, y'all.